Working Cows Podcast, episode 127.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, and I know I promised Steve Kenyon, and I promised that Steve Kenyon's episode is recorded, and all elements of it are intact, but wanted to take some time and get this episode out on the front end of the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line conference. A partner in the execution of this conference is the Burley County Soil Conservation District, and today I am joined by Daryl Oswald of the Burley County Soil Conservation District, and we're going to talk to him about the five principles of soil health and how those things are being implemented in different operations of differing income streams and how different people are making use of the tools that soil health represents. So don't worry. Steve Kenyon's coming, but really excited to be joined today by Daryl Oswald of the Burley County Soil Conservation District. Daryl, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Clay. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today.
Yeah. And when I had the opportunity to release episodes in back-to-back weeks with Josh Dukart and Gabe Brown, I took the opportunity to ask, I think it was Josh, I said, what is going on in Burley County? You've got the Minocan Farm and the Burley County Soil Conservation District and Gabe Brown and Josh Dukart and all these guys up there. And he credited the Burley County Soil Conservation District, at least with his transformation or helping along with that. So I guess I'd like to hear a little bit about some of the goals of the Burley County Soil Conservation District and how you guys are operating up there.
Well, yeah. And thanks to Josh, and hats off to him for talking about the Burley District. It's an exciting time. And with the advent of the Minocan Farm back in 2009, it's hard to believe it's 10 years old already, going on 11, but, the soil district has always tried to be in the forefront of a lot of things, and this building soil health through a systems approach has kind of taken center stage, and of course the Minocan Farm is kind of the centerpiece of all that, Clay, and it's an exciting time, and Josh mentioned the transformation of people and how things are turning over, but you really owe it to a lot of group of mentors. Mentioned Gabe Brown and Jay Fuhrer, and I remember in '99 when Gabe was on the Soil Conservation District Board of Supervisors, and things got going, and there was talk of this way back then. So and others as well. We had a very progressive board, and we continue to do that. Our board is always cutting edge and trying to push us, the group of employees that we have, to do some different type things, because they see the value in it, and there's a definite need for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that the Minocan Farm got started in 2009. What was some of the motivation behind getting started with that research facility?
Well, Clay, we had a 5-acre plot east of Bismarck here, and of course when the opportunity came up to buy this 150-acre parcel, the board jumped at it because we had been doing some demonstrations out there. Some of our first cover crop work back in 2006, I believe it was six, it might even have been five, was done on this plot east of town, and the board was very excited about that, and we needed more space, and we needed more space for some of the other things that we do as well with the soil district on the tree planting end. And now it's, developed with the urban conservation focus and all those things. But that was the motivation behind the farm. Again, they wanted to show people what's possible when you manage your soil for the end game of building it back and restoring the function. So,
and earlier you said that one of the goals is to build soil health through a systems approach. And we've talked some about soil health, but I think you can't really ever talk too much about it. When a guy like Burke Tigert says that when he started out, he loved cows and that's why he got into ranching. And then he learned that he needed to love his grass. And he said now at his stage in life, he's learning that he's got to love his soil. So, I guess you can't ever talk too much about soil health, but I'd like to hear a little bit about the through the systems approach piece of what you're doing there. What do you mean by that? And what are you, how are you implementing that strategy?
Well, Clay, we're focusing on rejuvenating soil by putting the carbon back. And in order to put the carbon back, there's some principles that we go by and things that we need to do, when you focus on that, people get excited. Okay? They want to go home, they want to take a degraded field and build the soil health back into their soil, because ultimately, we're dealing with a degraded resource when it comes to the soil. And we've came to that realization. And if you take the step-by-step process and of the five principles and put your focus towards that, you can build those things back. So, the five pillars of soil health, as we call them, soil armor, minimizing the soil disturbance, plant diversity, the continued cover of a live plant and root, and of course, finally, livestock integration. And I can elaborate on any of those or all of those five principles and how we did it at the Minocan farm.
Sure. No, I definitely want to pursue that. The systems approach piece, though, is that just essentially we are looking at the system as a whole, or is there
exactly?
Okay. All right.
Yep. Yeah, it's a holistic approach. It's an ecological function, ecological functions management, system, where, one thing affects all the things. We had a strategic planning meeting, the team that we have at the Burleigh County Soil District, and we talk about our holistic goal and our holistic approach. And there's actually been some discussion that how that all plays into, because we are the Minocan farm and not individual. And we've had some interesting discussions and how we want to move forward with that. But, the systems approach is a recycling and a regenerating approach. So one thing affects the other thing, which affects the other thing, and it kind of runs in a circle, right? Today's system in agriculture, unfortunately, is kind of like a pipe. You put in the input and something, and you need something to come out of the end, right? And when enough doesn't come out of the end, we end up putting more things into the input, and it's troublesome. There's no question about it. And places like the Minocan farm, again, they show groups and visitors and farmers and educators and stuff what's possible when you manage for soil function and trying to increase that. So that's really the exciting part. And you can't reiterate that enough, because, this, not to get too complicated, but when you start with a soil that's degraded, the soil biology has already become accustomed to that, right? And they've adapted. So with these changes that occur when you implement the principles, the biology adapts as well. And that's something that's totally new and exciting, on how that all gets done and things and stuff. And so I leave that to minds much greater than my own. to be honest with you. So, but it's exciting stuff, no doubt. And I think we could use a little bit more of that in agriculture, you know, some positive, exciting things. So,
yeah. And at the risk of taking a bit of a negative turn here, I would like to hear your perspective on what degraded the soil. And I know probably the simple answer is, well, we didn't leave cover on the soil. We didn't integrate livestock. We didn't have biodiversity. We didn't have a living root in the soil. We were disturbing the soil, but is there anything specifically that, we can talk about as far as things that led to degraded soil, aside from just saying, well, the opposite of the five principles of soil health?
Well, it can be, but you know, it's a human thing. You know, our European ancestors, you know, the need to simplify the system. And we talk a lot about that at the Minocan Farm and with different groups, and not every group is different, Clay. And again, that's what makes it exciting. So, but a lot of times we talk about the human aspect of soil health and, you know, why is it so hard to go back or implement the soil health principles? And really, I think as humans, it's our thought process that we want to simplify things. And of course, we've made the landscape into monocultures because that's simple and it's very reductionist science-like, and we can quantify those things, whether it's bushels, whether it's pounds of livestock and all those things. And I tell people it doesn't make us bad people. It, you know, there's a lack of education, and of course, Minocan Farm helps fill that need. And these systems aren't simple, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, nature isn't simple. Ecology isn't simple. And so these things are very complex, and we need to manage them as that. The soils that we have, especially, well, here in the Dakotas and specifically about Burley County, were developed, you know, obviously with migrating livestock and rest and regrowth and short exposure times to grazing and long rest and recovery, and that built our soils. And of course, full of diversity, right? You know, the monoculture aspect, you know, was foreign to that soil when the plow and annual cropping was first introduced. But it becomes just a kind of a vicious cycle where, you know, we try to simplify things and we try to become more efficient, and of course it's gotten us further down this path of, like I described with the pipe, you know, you put something in one end and you want the other thing out. And that's a simple thing, but it's causing us some problems. And, again, we need to get back to the recycle aspect and the regenerative, and that's how we're going to build soil back.
Would you say that part of the problem then in conventional management is trying to make a complex system simple? I mean, through managing it with chemicals?
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, it isn't the chemicals and it isn't, you know, the fertilizer. It's the combination of a whole list of things. And none of that stuff is evil or bad, but, you know, too much of it is. It can be, and of course, from a profitability standpoint, it's really not taking us anywhere, because we all know that these inputs and these things that we need to prop up the system, per se, have become very, very expensive. And in a time of low commodity prices, such as what we're in now, makes it very, very difficult. And so that makes you know, the farming and ranching thing not such a good thing. And again, it doesn't need to be that way. And the Minocan Farm and the implementation of using the five soil health principles can help with that. And so that's why we're we do what we do. So,
yeah, I really appreciate that perspective and the motivation that you guys have shared. So I guess let's dive off into a little bit more in-depth look at some of these soil health principles. And seems to me, you know, I guess I'm not that involved in the row crop world, but every time I hear somebody talk about soil health principles, it seems to me that they start with that same one of armor on the soil. Is that because that's the most important one? Is that because that one is the most neglected? Do you have a perspective on that?
It is very vital, and it you need to cover the soil first if you're going to move down this road of soil health. And of course, it's much like our existence. We need protection, and covering the soil, of course, in the natural world, again, nature is always covered. And so covering the soil, you protect it from heat, the evaporation of the moisture that we do get. And of course, it shelters it, wind and water erosion. Before you do anything, obviously you need to control erosion before you can build back the soil. And that's vitally important. And then of course, the armor provides a habitat for the soil food web, you know, the people that are on top. And of course, your goal should be to get 100% of the soil covered,
right,
with a green plant or residue. You know, can be either or, green plant or residue, and when at least the growing periods occur, and then of course during the dormant season as well. So it's number one for a reason, again, because you got to cover it.
Yep.
And so it's vital.
Yep. And so we're providing a habitat for the microbial life, or the organic matter and all those things.
Yeah.
And
the surface dwellers there too, when you talk cover.
Sure. Yep. And also we are providing an opportunity for the, like you said, minimizing the wind and water erosion.
Right.
I was talking to a guy the other day, and he said that his son did a soil health or a soil test on his land and found out that his topsoil was, I think, 6 inches or a foot or maybe even 2 feet below the surface, because all of his neighbor's soil had eroded onto his land, and it wasn't their topsoil. It was already their subsoil that had eroded onto his land and covered his topsoil up over, you know, however many decades.
Yeah. And you know, unfortunately, I mean, that story is, it occurs all too frequently. And obviously, those types of things should be considered unacceptable. But it does happen. But the good news is, again, you know, we're working on it and doing some things. And so keeping the soil covered, obviously, would help that. And then, Clay, you move into number two with minimizing the soil disturbance. You need an environment for that soil food web and the plants to grow, obviously. And so, you know, that's what minimizing soil disturbance is all about, because if you have all these things, and we know that they are in the soil, and you come in and disturb all that with tillage or different scenarios, obviously that's not good. And so it doesn't create the environment that we want for that soil food web and for those plant root growth. So then, you know, it doesn't work so well. You know, the cover, the disturbance. And then, of course, we talked a little bit about this earlier. We need some plant diversity. You know, our soils were built with diversity. And from the native grasses and legumes and forbs that we had. And so we need generally a rotation that includes crops from all four crop types. And so, which is ideal.
Can we, before we move on to the minimizing disturbance, could you talk a little bit about different forms of disturbance? Is it just mechanical? Are there other forms of disturbance that we should keep an eye on?
Well, I think mechanical is the big one, but you know, there is other, you know, obviously when you don't have it covered, and if you don't have the cover, you know, wind and water mm-hmm. can be a form of disturbance as well. And you know, people talk about fire and that is a form of disturbance as well, but one that occurred in the natural world, and that can be a hot topic discussion as well. But so there is other forms, but the big ones are tillage of any type, and you know, we hear about some of these lighter tillage implements and things like this, and used for leveling and those type things. But the bottom line sometimes is disturbance is disturbance, and none of it is a real positive. If you can keep it to a minimum, I guess that would be considered better. But you know, if we can eliminate it completely, that's where we want to go. So.
Sure. Would you say that overgrazing could potentially be a disturbance as well then?
Yeah, yes, it could. Yeah. Sure. The, you know, obviously, when we talk the fifth principle of livestock integration, if we graze these covers and these different things and we do it too much and you know, too much animal impact, obviously that would be a disturbance. And of course, when you look across our rangeland and pasture land, that form of disturbance, of course, occurs too. And yeah, you could certainly slide that one in there. That kind of slipped my mind, but that's definitely one. So
sure. You kind of, I think, covered the biodiversity piece of that. I guess, so my follow-up question on the biodiversity piece would be, how are people accomplishing that? How are they fulfilling that principle of soil health in their systems?
Well, you know, obviously, again, getting back to the four crop types, but when you talk the fourth principle, you talk about continual live plant root. That's when you can bring in your cover crops. And within those cover crops, Clay, you can add a lot of diversity into those. And so we talk a lot about cover crops, and we get the question of, you know, what should we plant in our cover crops, or what species should we include in our cover crops? And of course, the first thing we tell them is you need to identify your resource concerns. You know, what are you trying to achieve with this cover crop? And the other thing is include in there what you don't have. And so you want to feed the biology something that they haven't had. And of course, with these cover crops, you can do that. That gives you the flexibility. So if you're growing a lot of cool seasons, or you're trying to rejuvenate an old cool season hay field with brome and Kentucky bluegrass and others, you know, design a cover crop that's going to go on that doesn't have a lot of cool seasons in it, or maybe none at all, because that'll help get things jump-started as far as of what it hasn't had. And the same with cropping. You know, obviously, if you grow a lot of wheat, you know, adding a warm season in there would be excellent. And, you know, your corn and soybean rotations, when you can bring cool season broadleaves or cool season grasses into that scenario, that's always a positive, because it's giving the system something it doesn't have. And we've experimented quite a bit, or not, you know, some on this planting green concept of using winter annual rye, and we're really excited about it. And it's a way to lengthen that time period where we have a continual live plant root, Clay, that's exciting. And so we want to work on those things and try to perfect those things. And there's a lot of individuals out there that are doing a lot of that, and hats off to them for that. But the goal is to have a continual live plant growing as long as possible. You know, if we could do it 12 months out of the year, 24/7, 365, that would be great. So
could you talk a little bit more about the four crop types for a guy like myself?
Yeah, you know, again, with plant diversity, the four crop types, the main ones are the warm season grass, the warm season broadleaves, the cool season grass, and the cool season broadleaves. And And so if you were to have a strict annually cropping rotation, you know, obviously trying to have as much of that diversity in there as possible would be helpful. But again, that's not always profitable and practical. And so you try to achieve as much diversity as you can. But when you look at the corn soybean rotation, you know, obviously we're in the warm season realm there. And that's where implementing a cool season back into that can be a real positive and add to your diversity.
And I think you mentioned the fourth principle, talking about a living root in the soil as much as possible and as long as possible. Do we see, let's talk about northern climates. Is that accomplished with some of the, like the radishes and the turnips and brassicas and those kinds of things more often in these climates? Or what are, is there other options there that people should be aware of?
There can be a wide variety of plants that work up here. You know, the turnips and radishes are just one component, or a brassica component of a cover crop mix. They are popular in some instances, and generally they should probably be included as a portion of a mix. And so when we talk cover crops and we talk about designing them, you know, again, we talk with producers and people and try to design it for something that they haven't had. And there's a wide, long list, you know, some cover crops and things, and the millets and the sorghum sedans and the grazing corn and the different types of clover and legumes and cowpeas and you know, we've used some soybean and things like that. And so just because it's colder and the growing season seems to be shorter, you know, we try to tell people not to let that influence them. And again, it goes back to the human nature things. When people plant covers, and let's say you put a cover in after a cool season annual crop like wheat or barley, and obviously, you know, we want to see it take off, and we want to see a lot of biomass, and, you know, because that's what we like. But know that things are occurring even when that crop is very, very small, and it doesn't have to be this robust, thick stand. Things occur, and you're building soil aggregates even, you know, at a very young, early stage of that cover crop, and so that's important to remember.
Sure. One of the, I guess maybe I'm biased, but I drive by fields often in different parts of the country, and even in different parts of the world, you see fields where there's not a fence around it. It's just a crop field and there's no fence. So obviously integrating livestock is not happening in that place very regularly or ever. Am I just biased, or is that one of the ones that is the hardest hump to get over when you start to talk soil health with people who are involved in the cropping side of things?
Absolutely. It definitely is. And of course, it goes back again. There's nothing evil in it, but again, we try to simplify the landscape, and we've taken the livestock off the land, and it's not a good thing. And so that's one of the things at the Minocan Farm and at Burley Soil District that we've tried to work very hard on. But like you said, it's a long uphill climb. I think as we get the more information and education out there, and people are seeing the value of what livestock along with the other principles can do, that you can move the system along quicker and start your regeneration process faster, Clay. We're starting to see some changes. Now, there is individuals, and that, again, that makes us humans, that will never have a cow out on the place. Excuse me. And I get that. But there's a lot of others that are out there that know the benefits or they're thinking about it. And we need to implement programs and systems and educate people on how to get started doing that. And that's vital. And this planting green scenario that I talked about, where we're using these winter annuals and things like that, provides an exciting time for livestock. It's exciting, I should say, that's an opportunity to lengthen your grazing season and then add livestock into it. And people, as this becomes more the norm, I think you'll see people have that going on. But there is some obstacles, like you said, lack of fencing. People have taken the fences out. The water, obviously, livestock have to have some water. And generally speaking, and that varies, of course, when you're grazing your cover crop, because they can have some snow as well. But and so there is some things to overcome. And then the mindset of, oh, there's too much compaction and those types of scenarios, where people need to realize when you graze something, it's a function of time. And, you know, you don't need to compact it if you graze it correctly. And when you base your grazing on the short exposure, long rest recovery, the key there is the short exposure thing. And, you know, your compaction issues kind of go away. We've grazed cover crops up on the ranch by wing for a long, long time. And compaction has generally been the furthest thing from us. And so, but we need to get some information and education out there. And we tell people at the Minocan Farm that are serious, you know, we tease with the annual croppers. You don't need to own the livestock yourself, but you need to find somebody that does own them. And we need to be creative and think out of the box, and we need to make it, again, profitable for the person that is doing the annual cropping and of course, for the person that's got the livestock. And I think we can do that. It's not easy, again. And when we talk in these systems approach, it's never easy, but these are things that we can, all things that can be overcome, Clay. So,
yeah. So I guess a couple of things that came to my mind, and you kind of already hit on them, was that we should recognize the challenges of the integration of livestock and not just gloss over them and say it can be done, you know, and you've done that, talked about the compaction issue, talked about the grazing short durations and the water issue. And I think, you know, honestly, from the perspective of a mob grazing system, the water in the winter is the easiest because they can walk back to the water point. If if you're worried about them compaction or making compaction, you could fence off a lane that would minimize the amount of area that they're walking back to a water point over. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that you brought up that I kind of wanted to call attention to was the idea of stacking fiefdoms. And this is Joel Salatin's word for it, but the idea of you don't have to own the livestock, you know, and like I want to integrate chickens onto my land, the piece of land that I own and that I'm managing. I want to integrate chickens, but I don't really necessarily want to own the chickens, and I don't really necessarily want to own the structure that the chickens live in. But if I could find somebody who would buy the chickens and bring me the structures that they could live in, I would take care of moving them for them, and then we could split, you know, some amount of the profits on something like that. So, I mean, the cow piece could be a stacked fiefdom on top of your enterprise mix, where somebody else is just paying you to turn their cows out in a winter annual rye cover crop mix. And that could be another income stream.
Definitely. And these are all things that need to be considered. And again, that's thinking out of the box and, you know, doing some things that are a bit different that we may not be comfortable with. But I think we have to realize that moving forward, these things are going to have to get figured out, because regenerating the soil and building it back, obviously, is of utmost importance. And you know, not everybody has to own cows, or not everybody has to have some livestock, but we need to move forward and get as many people going on this as possible, because there's lots and lots of books out there, of course, how these civilizations have gone by the wayside. And when you get down to the brass tacks of it, it had a lot to do with soil degradation, you know, and so obviously we don't want to go down that road.
Yeah.
And we can input, you know, you can't buy things that will replace, you know, the things in the soil food web and that type scenario. And you can to a point, but again, why not build it back and get it for free and save the input and do something else fun and exciting with that dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess before we transition to talking to some of the things that you guys have coming up at the Burleigh County Soil Conservation District and the Monocan Farm, could you just touch on this? And you've already kind of touched on it, the idea of profit, not yield, being kind of the measurement of success in farming and ranching.
Well, and I've learned a little of this from my own scenario, and then of course the group of mentors that we talked about earlier, and you know, the Ken Millers of the world, and Josh has taken this thought process down the road, and the Gabe Browns. But you know, mentioned earlier about the bushels and pounds thing, and again, that's a simplistic way of looking at things, and at the Monocan Farm, and we're getting more into this economy thing all the time, because obviously this all has to work financially, right? And so, you know, we move more towards a profit per acre mentality.
Mm-hmm.
and that's not easy, because again, it's different, and people aren't used to it, and so it's a bit strange. And we had a group of bankers out this last summer, and a great group, and we had a lot of fun with them, and Jay Fuhrer, you know, the soil health specialist now at the Monocan Farm, retired NRCS employee recently, you know, he talks about a balance sheet, and we all know that we have a balance sheet, or we need a balance sheet, and of course nowhere on that balance sheet ever is written carbon, right? And so you get a lot of perplexing looks, and it really makes you think that maybe that should be on there. When you're sitting across the desk with your banker, you know, maybe there should be carbon on the balance sheet, okay? Because that's what drives the whole system. And so if you raise a wheat crop and you were profitable, you know, pick your number as far as how profitable you were, but you did it at the expense of the resource, and you burned up some soil carbon, or you lost some organic matter, or you depleted your resource. How profitable really were you? And right, these are the type of things that we need to consider. And so that all goes back to the profit per acre and those types of scenarios, and really, really complex, because what I found is too, is, and bankers they're very traditional. And they're kind of like farmers and ranchers. And, you know, that's why they've been working together a long time and continue to work together. But but it really, really opened their eyes to some things. And hopefully we can help move this thing forward from an economics thing of understanding how beneficial these principles are and how important, and what is the dollar amount of building back your soil?
Sure.
And very, very complex. Again, exciting to visit with people about, makes for people like talking about it, but we're going to continue to go down that road. The the Burley County Soil Conservation District Board of Supervisors has, you know, really been thinking about it. And so they've kind of put it on us to try to get out there and try to figure out that economic thing. And hopefully, you know, the longer we do this with long-term soil monitoring things, you know, we'll come up with some clues and answers, but we're going to need help from other individuals as well. And, you know, we're not afraid to do that at the Minocan farm. And the collaboration thing has been huge for us. And we have an open door policy. You just got to walk through the door and you know, let us hear what you got to say. So, the economic thing is, it can really make your head hurt at times, Clay. So.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not even to mention even a carbon credit system, which I don't know how far away that is or if it'll ever materialize, but there are things to be thought about there too. I guess kind of as before we talk about the events you've got coming up at Minocan Farm, I would like to talk about what is going on at Minocan Farm right now from a soil health perspective. What do you have growing there? What's it, you know, we're talking in February, what is in the soil, what is on the soil, some of those things.
Well, our fall was kind of like a lot of different people's fall, and we didn't quite get as much as things as we would have liked getting done as far as our winter covers. But we do have a field or two that have some winter annual rye on it, and so we're going to be doing some things into them. We had a failed intercropping trial, and I didn't say this, but it's absolutely true. We do fail at quite a few things at the Minocan farm, and we're okay with that. So better us to do it than some other individual. But we had a failed, and it wasn't really a failure per se, because we're always learning from it. Mm-hmm. But we had a intercropping trial that didn't go well, and we ended up putting clover on it. And so, you know, that's going to come back this spring, and we're going to look into planting into that. We had some really exciting 60-inch corn last year with some perennials and some cover crops in between. And there was a lot to be learned from that. And it got someone like myself really excited, because obviously I come from a livestock background, and, you know, the grazing potential in something like that, Clay, is really crazy stuff. And you know, the tonnage and things, and so that's been out there. But, you know, this year we're talking about putting some 60-inch sunflowers in, you know, with some flax possibly. And these are things, you know, we've sat down a few times already this winter and talked about how we're going to move forward. But we're going to have some beans in there, or, you know, have some peas to start out, and then put some soybeans in a field. We've got a couple corn fields that we're going to put in again. And we've dabbled with this 15-inch wheat last year, and so we're going to try to do that again. We're going to do some intercropping, I think, with some yellow pea and canola will be one of our fields that we've discussed. And the interesting thing about all this, and we really haven't even mentioned this, and it, you know, we're starting to get into these bioinoculants that, and we have dabbled in this tea thing before and that, but where we're able to put down this worm juice, for lack of a better term, and we're putting it down right into the trench when we seed, and we're doing comparisons within a field with that, and we're starting to see some positive things there. And we're, you know, the long-term soil monitoring and the visual, you know, things that we'll see, we'll keep track of that. And so that's a whole nother animal, but that's going to be a big part of what we do at the Minocan farm this year.
Sure.
Again, it all part of the recycle, you know, the regenerative systems approach to move it forward. So.
Yeah, I had a neat opportunity when I was in Canada speaking at the Holistic Management Canada 2020 conference to tour an industrial scale worm farm. And I mean, the worm farm piece of that is they're capturing the byproduct. They're capturing the worm castings and
yep.
turning them into extract and turning them into a soil amendment. And so I'm excited to release an episode that I recorded there at their facility and talk a little bit more about that and how it can be used in lots of different contexts. But what I'd like to hear from you now, I guess if we haven't left anything too major on the table, I'd like to give you an opportunity to share a little bit about the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line conference. That's February 25th and 26th of 2020. And we are releasing this, Lord willing, on February 17th. So that would be a week from tomorrow, and Wednesday is an opportunity for people to come and see a little bit about what's going on at the in your area anyways with the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line conference.
Right, Clay, a big event coming up again the 25th and 26th, a Tuesday and a Wednesday. And we're really pleased and happy to have our headliner, per se, is Dr. Fred Provenza. And Fred is going to come up and he's going to talk both days, which is exciting. We have some ARS people speaking as well. We're talking about the link between land management and food. And you know, this kind of the theme of the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line this year is discover the triple bottom line, which is economics, ecology, and sociology. So we talked a little bit about the human aspect today, and that's all part of it. And we brought in Dr. Tom Raby from General Mills is going to talk about, obviously they're from the food side, and we'll speak to the economics of it. We have a banker in line to speak from a local bank here in town, which is, you know, and he's going to talk about his perspective from both sides of the desk because he's a banker. He's a farmer and a rancher himself. We're going to talk to some producers. We're going to have an innovative producer panel on day one. One from the eastern part of North Dakota, one from the western part of North Dakota. And so that's exciting. And then the end of the day, on day two, we're going to have Dr. Jerry Hatfield talk about the future directions and challenges of agriculture. And then we'll have a speaker Q&A and a wrap up after that. And again, a lot of collaboration into this Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line with ARS, the Area 4 Research Farm. Morton County Soil District has become a great partner for us. The North Dakota Grazing Lands Coalition Extension, North Dakota Extension, and of course NRCS and all those. So it's really quite exciting working with all those groups so we can put on an event like this. And that's, I think we talked this morning, we've got just under 300 signed up so far. We've got room for more. You know, we'd appreciate if you could RSVP by the 18th of February. We understand how things can go too. So,
sure.
And we want to get the information and education out there to as many people as we can, Clay.
Sure. And am I understanding right, Dr. Fred Provenza there at the end of day one and the beginning of day two?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. He's going to talk about the broken linkages, the soil, plants, herbivores, and humans, and how that all connects. And I heard Dr. Provenza in Reno last year, and this was part of his presentation. And it's really, really interesting stuff that really makes you think. And there's a lot of material there. So looking forward to hearing that again, because I'm a slow learner. I could hear it probably 3-4 times and it still probably wouldn't all sink in. So
Yeah, never hear it too much. And then
right.
You mentioned Dr. Tom Raby from General Mills. I mean, that's the company that put Gabe Brown on the cover of a Wheaties box, so it can't be too far off. So
right. And you know, they're one of the companies that it's knows about this or is it's on their radar as far as you know, this healthy food thing, and so he's gonna talk about that and that's important because right. I think that you're going to see more and more of that occurring because people want
nutrient dense food.
Right. And they want to know these things. And we as producers of food, we need to know that. And we need to know which direction that they want. And of course, the soil health building regeneration soil stuff that occurring is ultimately what people want. So
sure. Well, I bumped Steve Kenyon back a week because his topic was more evergreen than this one. I wanted to get the word out again about the Farming and Ranching for the Bottom Line conference, February 25th and 26th, 2020. There will be a link in the show notes page for today to that conference and where people can go to find out more at workingcows.net/127. So Daryl, thanks for your time today.
Appreciate the opportunity, Clay. It was great to visit with you. And by all means, an invitation to the Minocan Farm, just contact us and bring a group up. We'd love to have you. So
I will take you up on that someday for sure. So I appreciate it.
As I had just finished recording this episode, I took off and flew out of here and ran to Pure, South Dakota. And on the way there, I stopped in Faith and filled up with some fuel. And just so happened that a former guest of the Working Cows podcast, Lyle Perman, was there, and he was wearing his Minocan Farm, Burley County Soil Conservation District windbreaker. And he rolled down the window, and Judge Jessup of the South Dakota Project Coordinator for the South Dakota Grassland Coalition was sitting in the back of the car, and I got to talking to them, and I said, hey, I just recorded an episode. We were talking about Minocan Farm and about Burley County Soil Conservation District, and Judge Jessup said, oh, yeah, who are you talking to? And I said, oh, it's Daryl Oswald. And he says, yep, he's part of the Burley County Mafia. So, yep, that's, I recognize that with all of the great things going on there in Burley County. And we've had quite a few of them here in the 120s episodes of the Working Cows podcast, but good things going on there. And a lot of it centers around soil health, and a lot of it centers around people being willing to try new things and experiment and fail and learn things and try again. So real good stuff there with Daryl Oswald. All right, so next week, how about this? We'll do episode 128 of the Working Cows podcast with Steve Kenyon talking about the discipline of lifelong learning. And again, as I said last week, it's something I saw him exhibit there and something I saw many others exhibit there at the Holistic Management Canada Conference, and really just wanted to get some of those thoughts on paper. So, or in ones and zeros, as it were. So anyways, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for all of the feedback and everybody reaching out. It's been really a busy time, and I'm going to try and get around to responding to a bunch of these emails. But anyways, we will see you next week for episode 128 of the Working Cows podcast with Steve Kenyon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.